We're podcasting from Nashville Guitar Store in the heart of Music City, USA. Bringing you inspiration, education, and behind-the-scenes stories from prominent guitarists and others influential in the music profession. Sharing tales of their history, discussing guitars, their gear, their work, what's on tap for the future, and delivering wisdom we'll all appreciate. Your host is Marcia Ware Wilder, nationally recognized radio personality, singer, actor, and author.
Mark Townsend in the studio, best known in Christian circles as the guitarist for DC Talk. He's worked with Bashing the Code, which takes me way back. See, I worked in Christian radio like mid-90s. So that's well, but I was a lover of Christian music way back, as far as like, you know, Andre Crouch and Larry Norman.
Oh, there you go.
So yeah, all my life. This is pretty much all my life. So Bashing the Code ain't nothing for me. If they had a Christian music Wikipedia, that would be me. But you have also worked with Jennifer Knapp, yep. One of my favorite bands, OC Supertones. That takes me back. And Zilch.
Yes.
We've been talking. Welcome to the show, first
well,
of all.
You.
Thank you for thanks for taking time to.
Thanks
just,
for inviting.
Yeah, because you do so many of these things. If you Google Mark's name, lots and lots of really great interviews you've taken place, and just within the last few months. And I'm just grateful you're stopping by to talk to us. I learned something about you in the last 5 minutes before we even started recording, that you're actually like jam buddies with one of the president's lawyers. I'm like, you know, and I had to sit there and think about it when Mark Bortz, our captain, my captain here, said that. I was like, oh my gosh, Jay Sekulow, that's right, because Brother Sekulow, he's not only one of the most amazing gifts to the legal profession, particularly for Christians and people of faith, but he's also an accomplished drummer.
Yeah, it's really amazing. It, for 35 years plus, he's been essentially a Supreme Court lawyer. You know,
constitutional
law expert. For sure. And it's funny because apparently, yeah, like 5-6 years. He started playing in college.
Yeah.
Started playing drums in college a bit, and then of course became a lawyer.
Right.
For a profession.
Wait, which, and for all of you out there who have friends that are drummers, it can happen to you too.
Yeah, exactly. And so apparently, I guess it's probably been 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that knows Jay knows that he is super high energy.
Yes.
And he's great at what he does, and that's part of his gift set. But he's also really high energy, long story short, I believe he was given some great counsel to, like, hey, as you get older in life, you know.
Tell me some of your other strengths.
I think more for just stress relief.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, more than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely.
And apparently, Jay had said something to me about, you know, well, he had played music back in the day, you know, in college and stuff. And I think the doctor kind of said, yeah, well, why don't you start playing again, kind of thing, you know? So he started getting back into it and just started jamming with some, you know, just friends, hang buddies of his and stuff. And then I ended up becoming friends with him, and it was like, okay, well, Mark, why don't you get together and jam with us? And all of a sudden now we have Jay Sekulow Band after several years.
And if you Googled that, there's the first video I saw was who does it? Well, hold your head up.
Yeah, is that the Argent.
Argent.
Yeah, exactly.
The Argent. And, I mean, it's great. John Schlitz on lead vocal. John Elefante.
Both of them
are singing. And John, for those of you who don't know, John Schlitz sang with a Christian rock group called Petra. John Elefante with Kansas and his own thing. Man, I'm telling you, there's just so much we could talk about. But, I mean, with that, I just think that's really cool that you jam with the president's lawyer.
Yeah,
I'm mad at you.
It is interesting.
You'll totally have my appreciation when you get cornered by Mike Huckabee and he sits in and plays bass for you. So.
Well, I think that's inevitable.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know it's on the way. Come on, Governor, bring it. You also, another potential guest for the show, Otto Price, you were in DC Talk with him.
Technically,
yes. Since they're on quote unquote hiatus.
That's right.
And I hope you can hear the rabbit quotes that I'm making right now. But I'm holding out for that. I really had hope when Tate's in Newsboys, when Kevin was heading up Audio A, and then you had Toby Mac. I was hoping for a tour. I was holding out for a tour. I was like, oh, that would have been great to have like a little.
You know, we just did the cruise.
Yeah.
And it went amazingly well. And
yeah.
I think that was a. It was successful on all levels.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking, you know, about financially or whatever way it was attended. Relationship-wise, musically, it was successful.
Yeah.
And so I can tell you right now that won't be the last shows that we do.
I'm fully.
It won't be. I think honestly, I mean the you know, Tate works so much with the Newsboys and their schedule is so absolutely. It was funny. I was talking to him when we were doing rehearsals, and it was hysterical. I mean, it was like
he's hysterical.
Getting back into it, you know, it was like coming back and seeing the brothers that you know.
Yes.
Been 17 years since we really played together as a whole unit.
Yeah.
And it was like coming back and finding brothers you had forgotten you had.
Yeah, right. I mean, it was.
It was a blast, but it was like, you know.
I can't believe
it. How many shows you do in a year, man? And he goes, man, I'm doing 145 shows.
Stop
a year,
it.
You know? Yeah. I go, dude, that would wear me out. And he goes, well, he didn't say much.
Well, you can hear that he always had that great rasp to his voice.
Oh, yeah.
But it's even Tate's more great. So. Tate's amazing. They're all amazing.
But that was very successful. And so, don't be surprised, I think, at some point in time down the line you see.
Yeah. I'll be right there in the
touring.
I will be in the front row because that would be a dream.
Well, I would be on stage instead of the front row.
Yes, there you go. Well, let's go back. What we like to do in our time together, we like to go back to the beginning.
Sure.
And I was really excited when I found out that you are truly one of God's people because you were born in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh yeah.
OH.
I-O.
Come on now.
Oh yeah.
Whew. That's gospel right there.
Yeah, I'm a Buckeye.
Yeah, that's right. True blue. It's amazing how many Buckeyes are in the Nashville area.
There is.
Yeah, I actually my husband and I went to Farmer's Market in Franklin at the factory. There's this dude that makes these the state of Tennessee out of wood, and he'll decorate it however you want. He split it right down the middle. It says at the top, it says the Wilders. On one half, it's scarlet and gray. On the other half, it's LSU purple and gold. And it's like a house divided.
Yeah, exactly.
Not quite. But was guitar your first love back in Columbus when you were coming up?
You know what? I was one of those. I think I mentioned earlier before we had started the interview. I'm the youngest in the family. I have two older sisters.
Okay.
And they're one's 10 years older than me, and they're 13 years older than me.
Okay.
So, my house, you know, I was in, you know, have music everywhere. You
yeah.
Because my sisters bought albums and you know, played them all the time from the time I was a little kid.
Yeah.
All my family were musical, but none of them took it professionally.
Yeah.
Like, they all worked within the church.
Yes.
You know what I mean? As part of church choir or things of that nature. So, so my oldest sister started dating this guy.
Yeah.
And he played acoustic guitar, and they would sing at coffee houses back in the day.
Okay.
And so they would practice at our house, and I was 6 years old.
Yeah.
And I remember them, you know, and he's just, you know... You know, just easy, simple chords, and but it was really cool because they would harmonize and do stuff. I would just park right in front of him and watch what he was doing.
That's cool.
And just little, and then when he would leave, my dad had an old beater, like a Sears catalog guitar. It was probably a Silvertone or something. I had no idea what.
Yeah.
You know, the action's a mile off the neck and stuff. And but when they would leave, I would grab my dad's old, you know, guitar. And kind of emulate what my brother-in-law was doing.
Yeah.
And it came real quick to me. I just had the aptitude, you know, to pick it up. So literally by the time I was 8, I was actually pretty much playing way better than my brother-in-law.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah.
And I was kind of obsessed with it at that point, but it was more, it was just fun. You
yeah.
know? I mean, it was something that was inherent in me.
Yeah.
So I played guitar for a bunch of years, and then in high school, I hit the dreaded wall of on board with guitar, and I discovered Todd Rundgren. I don't know if you're familiar with Todd
Rundgren. Oh, yes.
Well, Todd was, you know, for those that don't know, he was the prince before there was Prince.
Oh,
he was
yeah.
the prince of the 70s.
Musical genius.
Play, play everything, everything, write everything, record everything, produce everything, mix everything.
I have his Nearly Human tour on CD, on DVD, excuse me. That tour in Japan, amazing stuff.
So when I got into Todd, all of a sudden it's like, well, I'm bored with guitar, so now I have to learn, you know, play piano, I have to learn bass, I have to learn drums, I have to learn recording, I have to, you know, this and that.
You're Steve Wonder, man, you're a musical genius.
So that's what I did. And I had a 4-track in my room, a little Tapco mixer and an SM57. And
you were set.
I was just noodling.
Yeah.
Making lots of mistakes and making lousy recordings, but eventually getting better.
Yeah.
So I became bored with it, even though I was playing in bands and stuff. Guitar at that point became almost more of, it ruined me for life in the sense of the Todd thing, because I never ever again became that guy that, oh, I just want to be a guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be Phil Kagi.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It wasn't that,
was
that
you.
For me.
Okay.
And Phil, who was a dear friend, it's like I look at him and I go, okay, guy's just clearly dedicated to guitar. I mean, the guy's just off the charts.
Oh.
Amazing. His facility is unbelievable. You know, just or faculty, whatever you would call it.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
But So when I got out of school, though, the easiest way for me to always make money and make a living, because, of course, musicians, you avoid a real job at all costs.
What's a job?
Yeah, exactly. was to play a guitar.
Exactly.
So I ended up, even though I was really interested in producing and doing other things, I ended up playing guitar. In Columbus, I did lots of sessions.
Okay.
Because I was pretty far.
What was the musical landscape like in Columbus at that point?
Back in the day, you know what? There were a couple of big bands, what I mean by big bands, they were the ones that everybody thought were going to be rock stars and make it and get signed and everything else. I don't know if you were probably in Columbus back in, you know, early 80s. Were you in Columbus?
I was in Urbana, but
were familiar with
that? I'm very familiar with Central Ohio,
There was Mark Chatfield had this band called Rosie. Mark Chatfield was in a band called The Gods in the 70s.
I remember that.
They were
name.
Signed to Kiss's record label. Mm-hmm. They were the big Columbus band, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Make it, but they didn't ever. Yeah. They never really make it. He actually plays for Bob Seger now, which is really cool.
My level of understanding was whoever got the main stage at the Ohio State Fair was pretty hot stuff.
Yeah, there you go.
So if you got that was that, because back in the 80s, I was high school, junior high school.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Still coming up. But we were in Columbus all the time.
Yeah,
so
the music scene was pretty wide, though.
Yeah.
Because being a high state's campus, of course, there's always some sort of music coming out of that, because when you get students coming in from all over the country and you know, with a university that size, obviously there becomes some sort of music scene there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, people come together and work out bands and do things of that nature. But a lot of bands, everybody's trying, you know, playing rock and roll in the day, which was great.
Yeah.
But
pre-MTV.
I was really well versed in all kinds of music.
Okay.
I just put my ears into everything, so I could play everything from disco, God forbid, at the time, which was an anathema to most people.
In the 80s, you know, playing disco,
But, you know, playing stuff like that. But I love Nile Rodgers. Things of that nature. But I also loved, I loved Rick Derringer at the time, too. So I had a pretty wide handle on things.
Yeah.
And I'd hear something on the radio, I'd record it, and I'd learn how to play it.
Yeah.
Like a lot of players, you know, did back then, especially. So, so I'd end up on playing on sessions. I played on sessions where it was full on, black gospel, and I'm the only Caucasian in the room, loving it, out of my head, because they say, "Hey, Townsend, do that rock and roll thing." You know what I'm saying? Because they wanted somebody to bring something with some, you know, edge to it, or whatever.
Yeah.
Time of my life.
Well, I think that's really interesting that you mentioned Nile Rodgers, because I love how he brings funk to. One of my favorite songs right now, I know it's been out for a while, but it's that collaboration between him and Duran Duran and Janelle Monáe.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah,
my gosh. I mean, but everything he does, it's almost the opposite of what you've just described. He's
exactly.
The lone brother in the room full of rockers.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's still, but it's still a really cool alchemy.
What comes out. And so I ended up doing all kinds of sessions for that, and just because I was playing piano, playing different instruments, I'd end up doing things of that nature.
Yeah. Well, who gave you your first break?
Okay, well, the first quote-unquote break, you mentioned Bashing the Code.
Yeah.
I ended up in Bashing the Code because of a custom record that I played on out of Columbus that me and a friend of mine had worked as part of this group, you know, on a custom album. And he had a girlfriend that was friends with this group out of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And so they basically heard this custom album and they were going, okay, who's the guitar player?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And so there was the connection, and they had made a record for Word Records. I don't even know if it ended up being distributed back then. Before they became Bashing the Code, they were called Found Free back then.
Found Free, that's it. Found Free. And, oh my gosh.
And I heard the record and I didn't care much for it at all.
Yeah.
And my friend took me to one of their shows in Cincinnati.
Because it was more middle of the road.
Found Free.
Found Free was more like Gaither-y.
Yes.
No disparagement to Bill Gaither, but it was more adult contemporary.
For me, it wasn't where I was at.
Right.
So he goes, but man, when you see him live, you'll love this. Well, we drove down to Cincinnati and basically I saw them there. And they were great. I mean, it was nothing like the record.
Yeah,
super high energy, totally like quote unquote new wave.
And
it was a whole different head, and it was pretty amazing. And literally after the show, came up and was talking to a couple of the guys, and they go, "You're Mark, aren't you?" Yeah. And they stuck a guitar in my hands and just had me start jamming with the guys afterward. And they take me out to the bus. It's like, "We need a new guitar player, and we think you're it."
And, that's great.
And I said, I don't think so. The reason being, partially, was my mother had passed away 8 months earlier.
Understood.
And my dad, it was just me and my dad at that point. And I had recently come back to the Lord.
Yeah.
In my walk of faith.
Yeah.
And I did not want to...
But I just love your response. I don't think so.
Yeah. I didn't feel comfortable leaving Dad. And they said, well, will you at least pray about it?
Yeah.
And I said, sure. So I went home and I prayed about it. And I talked with my dad. And my dad said, I'm fine. Go do this. This is what you do in life. Go do it.
Yeah.
So literally at that point, I'm joining, 2 weeks later, I'm out on the road with them hopping in. And then within a few months of that, we signed a record deal with Murr. Amy Grant was the top of the heap. We were the bottom of the heap.
Understood.
And we're making records, and it was cool. I mean, it was a real break for me.
Yes.
Because back in the day, back in that time period, Dan Huff, who was a world class player, always has been. Okay.
Another ungettable get. Future guest on the show, kids.
He played on everybody's record back then because that's what people did. They didn't use band guys on records.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in my case, I played on the records.
Yeah.
Because the record company felt like whatever flavor I was bringing to the music, they felt it was important to have that particular flavor.
Yeah.
So that was my quote unquote break into this whole thing. I didn't know anything about Chris music.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew nothing about it. I didn't know who Russ Taff was. I mean, I didn't know any of the quote unquote, things that were big back in the day. It's like, well, who's that?
Russell.
Who's Sandy Patty? I didn't even really know.
You're breaking my heart.
I didn't know much about Amy Grant for Pete's sake. It wasn't in the circles that I grew up. I'd heard about Rez Band or something. And I loved Phil Kagi because Phil Kagi, I just thought, was a great guitar player.
Yeah, and he was so, there was that whole, Beatles, Paul McCartney myth that's attached to him. And so you knew about that. But, DC Talk is the gig that anyone who knows your name, they're probably most readily associating
that's
you
right.
with. What was your audition process like with them, just as far as like, did you just show up? Did you play a show and they said you're in?
That's kind of a funny quick story too. I had spent the several years before, because after the Bash thing had ended or whatever, I just ended up playing and recording for just all kinds of different people. Mm-hmm. Just side guy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I spent a couple of years with Steve Taylor.
Yes.
As part of Steve Taylor and Some Band.
Yeah.
During the whole Sweat era.
Squint, yeah. I was going further back.
Yeah, it was in the mid-90s,
I was going to say, post-Meltdown at Madame Tussauds.
Yeah,
and all that.
We played all those songs. And Steve, just absolutely wonderful guy, Um, but long story short is we had played a festival up in Minnesota, what was Sunshine Festival up in Wilmer, okay? And Talk was playing there that night. We were, actually, I think we were on right before the speaker and right, you know, and they were on after the speaker. But a couple of the guys had seen me play, and at that point, they had only one guitar player in the band because they were doing a pop thing.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just, you know, it was just a real lean, mean,
was this,
know.
Were they, like,
that would have been, like, Free at Last era.
Yeah, I was going to say,
it was before Jesus Free.
Okay.
And so they needed another guy.
Yeah.
You know, essentially to take the spot and stuff. So they'd seen me play, and so basically, in a total act of class, their management contacted Steve and said, hey, is it okay if we talk to Mark? And unbeknownst to me, Steve was going to get off the road at the end of the year anyway because he was going to focus on his record label.
Right.
You know, he, and developing that whole thing.
Right.
So the timing was perfect. Yeah. And so, yeah, literally, so I, this will sound hard to believe, but it's kind of before the cell phone thing was prevalent.
Right.
Okay. Hard to believe that was ever a point in time.
Back in the horse and buggy days.
Pretty much, yeah. So what happened is they said, hey, yeah, can you come down and just play with us for and so, yeah, so I just literally came down. We were at SIR, one of those places, you know, here in town. And I played a few songs with them and then just took off, headed back home. I was living in Ohio at the time.
Yeah.
And it was just, came back and I, you know, just kind of waited on a call, see what happened. I mean, I thought everything went fine and stuff.
Yeah.
So me and the manager are playing phone tag without cell phones.
Yeah.
Okay. and finally, this is about a week going into it, and it's like a week before we start rehearsals for like the Freak Tour, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going, okay, do I have the gig or don't I have it? You know, I mean, I'm trying to be cordial in this. And finally, the manager called. My daughter, my oldest daughter, answered the phone. And she goes, my dad said to just tell him whether he has the gig or not.
Okay, I love her.
Okay?
I love her.
And so I got a report back, yes, or something like that. So finally, I got a hold of them. And he goes, dude, we thought you knew you had it the minute you got done. It's like, we didn't even think you were even thinking that you did or didn't have it. It's like, you had it. It's like, I remember what I said. It's like, okay, I told I said, my daughter goes, okay, is dad meeting you in Michigan for rehearsals or not?
Yeah. Okay, even better. I love her. That is so great.
Is he meeting you for rehearsals in Michigan or not? I go, he said yes. And he goes, I can't believe you didn't know you didn't have the gig.
That is hysterical.
Yeah, so the rest is history. I ended up, stayed with them. Pretty much the only thing I didn't do with them, they did a short 2-week run in like 2002, I think, on January. By then, I had started producing things that had paid my bills, and so I'd gone off the road.
Yeah.
And they were going solo anyway
at that point, yeah.
So, but yeah, I ended up being the longest tenured player there, which was kind of nutty.
That's very cool. When I think about who's listening to this show, I know that a lot of our listeners are up and comers, just trying to get their feet wet. And
sure.
The music, no matter what genre you're in, the music industry of that time and the music industry of now is totally different. But for players, there's I feel like there could be like a common thread when it comes to the audition process. What kind of advice would you have for an up and comer about auditioning? Say they've got they're just trying to get a gig.
Yeah.
So what advice would you have for them with regard to the audition process, with just chasing the dream? This kind of feels like an end of interview question, but it's really not, because it just you've had so many different experiences. I can't imagine that they were all the same, but just that fact that is there a common thread between any audition?
If you're getting one of them? This is going to sound really weird, but I mean, advice I can give you, and as far as a common thread, I don't know that there's a formula for anything, because honestly, it's meeting a need.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Okay.
But the way you put yourself in a position to show that you can meet a need is to be prepared.
Right.
You know what I mean? Be prepared. Be yourself. You don't have to try too hard or try too little either.
Yeah.
Because, once again, it depends. Like, for me, It has to go both ways.
Yeah.
Like the talk thing for me, I'm glad it worked out because they ended up being just absolutely the most wonderful people.
Yeah.
Just great human beings. Mm-hmm. Just great people you'd want to hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which is good. It wasn't a stand on the riser, play your part, and don't say anything and don't talk to us gig, which
right.
I know those exist out there.
Right.
That's not a gig for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry. That would never be comfortable for me because and for some people, it's very comfortable to do that.
Yeah, you're clocking in, you do your job, you clock out.
But that feels too workmanlike for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes even to my detriment, not to my detriment, I shouldn't say that, but you have to be yourself.
Yeah.
To a certain degree, and live with yourself.
Okay.
At the end of the day.
Okay.
You know, you try to you be prepared.
Yeah.
You know.
That's the I think that's there's your common thread.
You be prepared and just be nice.
Yeah.
And if they don't want a person that's nice, that's their deal, you know.
My husband and I were talking about how a lot of guitar players kind of come with their own swagger. Would you say that that's fairly true in your travels? You'd see a lot of guys that just, whether or not they had the chops, they had the swagger. To me, the swagger is kind of faking it to make it.
Yeah, for me, the guys that I've known for all these years in the business are not pretentious.
Yeah.
They're just down to earth and they're just talented. And they work really hard.
Are they the ones that get the work?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been in my experience that's the case. With me, I made a definite choice. Like, I could still be on the road playing for a country artist or doing this and that and the other because, just combination of the years of experience,
mm-hmm.
God-given talent, and the relationships I have, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But almost everybody I know that's successful, they're good at what they do, but they're not uptight, they're not pretentious, they're not fake, they're not... It's definitely not like what, you know, Hollywood makes it out to be.
Right, right.
It's definitely not like that. It's completely relational.
Yeah.
And you want to always leave as good an impression in people as you can. I don't mean that being false, but I'm just being relational. If you get fired from a gig, be gracious about it.
Yeah.
Be loving.
Don't burn bridges.
Not at all, because I'm telling you.
Because I'm
those
telling you,
people will Lori, call you back.
Yeah, Lori Morgan has fired me four times. Four times. I say fired because she and I laugh about it now. But sometimes you're not booking the gigs you want, and the first person I'm the most expendable piece on the chessboard. I don't play. I sing.
Yeah.
So when she doesn't have the money to pay a backup singer, well, baby, we've got to let you go for a minute, and then don't get mad. Because she'll call you back. So if that's a good word right there.
And
because
it's tough to do.
Yeah,
because
it's humbling.
Side,
yeah,
you know, your
yeah.
human side, you know, wants to feel slighted, and especially in a society that's way too serious and way too over emotional.
Yeah,
it's too easy to be that.
Yeah,
but like everybody that I've ever known, you people that make it in this business are not jerks.
Yeah. You can't...
People that are jerks do not have a long life.
Right.
They don't. And
right.
the guys that work for 20, 30 years, such as myself, you don't make it by being a jerk.
Don't go anywhere. We are far from done as far as our conversation with Mark Lee Townsend is concerned. When we come back, not only more great stories and insights from Mark, but also another round of our favorite game, Take Your Pick. It's all coming up in the second half of our conversation with Mark Lee Townsend. I'm Marcia Wilder, and you are at NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
At NashvilleGuitarStore.com, paying full price for guitars is a thing of the past. Like dial-up internet. You'll find Epiphone, Fender, Gretsch, Ibanez, Taylor, and lots more. What you won't find is the big box store prices. Get yourself a killer guitar at a fraction of the retail price at NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
He thinks you'll make a living.
The sun still shines. The song's called The Nowhere, which is a single off of Mark Lee Townsend's CD, which is scheduled for a January release. Thanks for joining me for part two of our conversation with this guitar great. I am Marcia Wilder, and you are at NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
Let's talk about the technique that you have. Are you self-taught?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. Now, why do you say unfortunately?
Because I do what works for me.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong. I mean, I have a decent degree of technical difficulty.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I do. I'm fairly accomplished in that area. But I do things. I don't do things in what people would consider necessarily a proper way. They're things that work for me.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Just whether it's voicings or how I approach vibrato or anything like that. It's nothing new or different or you know anything like that. But I just have things that work for me.
Yeah.
And
are you open to like exploring different types of technique, different types of playing? Has there been anybody that's gotten you to think about, you know, playing something differently? You say you come to the DC yeah. Talk gig just being you.
Yeah.
Say you go to another gig or you're just sitting in on a session and they're like, okay, I like what you're doing, but I need this.
Yeah. You know, it's important to be well-rounded.
Yeah.
Which is once again, a very lost art because music is so not well-rounded anymore. It's
right.
So genre-specific and
yeah.
everybody wants to put you in a box and
yeah.
this and that and the other.
Yeah, that's true.
It's bad about that. When I ended up producing a lot of records, a lot of punk records, back like especially like Reliant K stuff,
right,
you know,
right.
I produced a lot of their records. And it's interesting. They, you know, especially starting out, were rudimentary players.
Right.
Okay.
Because they were young. They're
exactly.
babies. They're babies.
But also, just even now, they have limited palette of what they do, and they would be the first to tell you that.
Yeah.
Because they do what they do, and mm-hmm. they don't really do anything else.
Yeah.
But what they do is great. But I can learn from that, and I have learned from that.
Yeah.
You know, any experience can be a learning experience. But for me, it always comes down to making a hard connection
mm-hmm.
as much as possible and trying to say something with the music versus a technical side. And once again, I'm a technical guy. Mm-hmm. I love playing 30-second notes as much as any other guy
right.
that likes to noodle a nerd, you
yeah.
know, on a guitar.
Yeah.
But for me, I really try to make a feel connection as much as I can.
Yeah.
That you know, it just always, at the end of the day, you know, is that thing.
I'm just writing down the words noodle nerds because I think we've just coined a new phrase. So from here on out, my question, I'm going to ask the question, are you a noodle nerd?
Yeah. I love to noodle at home, but on
yeah.
gigs and stuff like that,
yeah.
you don't get much of a chance to,
yeah.
you know, you work within the confines of the gig and stuff, but... And even though sometimes there's a challenge in imperfections.
Okay.
Okay. Like,
all right.
Okay, for example, I think I told you, I play in a Beatle band, but we don't wear wigs or suits, but we play Beatle music with a bunch of other guys here in
right.
town that are in the business.
Yes.
Okay. Well, trying to recreate Beatle things, those guys were not pristine players.
Yeah.
They were stylists more than anything else, and they weren't bad. George Harrison played some really amazing fingerstyle stuff, and he had a great slide feel to him.
He's my favorite Beatle.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
He's my favorite Beatle.
Just great. And just, yeah, I mean, their history speaks for themselves.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
But learning to play some things wonky,
mm-hmm.
like they did.
Just a little sloppy on the sides, yeah.
And purposefully,
mm-hmm.
when you're an accomplished player, is a challenge in and of itself.
Yeah, yeah.
And somebody would go, well, why would you want to do that? Well, because if you're trying to recreate the records, that's what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Classic example, I was telling you earlier, I played guitar and mixed a Heineken commercial.
Yes.
That had a cover of this song, Barabajaggle, which is a Donovan song from the 60s with Jeff Beck Group. Well, Jeff Beck played the intro of that.
Yeah.
Okay, and it goes like this. It goes, let's see here if I can. And, you know, it's sloppy like that.
Yeah.
I had to actually do that. And then the second time around, he misses the G string.
Yeah.
You can hear it on the original recording. It was a mistake.
Yeah.
I had to recreate that, you know.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, okay,
and
I see what you're saying.
So, you know.
Yeah.
All right. You know, and it's just
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's a challenge to trying to recreate something like that
mm-hmm.
and give it the right sort of feel to it, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can learn from anything, but I don't like, you see these things online all the time of, you know, shred this and that and the other, and it's like, I think that's great for learning technique and this and that and the other, but at the end of the day, you got to kind of try it. You want to try and find things that you like.
Yeah.
And find your own voicing and find where you can speak to people. And
yeah.
If you've lost your fingerprints,
you know, at the end of the day, and you're in pain and your fingers are bleeding, is it worth it? I mean, you got to find, like you said, what works for you.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk guitars and gear.
Sure.
You are actually playing right now one of our Nashville Guitar Store babies.
Yeah. It's like a Breedlove, which is cool. I mean, this instrument, it looks like it's all mahogany.
I believe it is.
Yeah, it looks like it's all mahogany and stuff. But it's cool. It's just, yeah, it's just got
now,
a nice little feel.
Okay, what guitars give you a warmer sound, a warmer feel? What do you prefer to play? What feels most comfortable in your hand?
You know what? I play anything and everything.
Because I know you're a Gibson, and I know you're a Gibson guy.
Yes, my favorite guitar ever is my first Gibson, which is a 78 Les Paul Deluxe.
Do you still have it?
I do. Actually, yeah, Gibson repairers, actually, they just did a refret on it.
So. Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I'm just, I love that guitar. It sounds amazing. Seymour, I've had Duncan rewind the pickups for me you know, a couple times, and I played it with Talk for a bunch of years.
Okay.
And, it's comfortable. It's just coming home. It's when I bought it, there was a standard with it. It's Tobacco Sunburst. There was a standard there in the music store, exact same thing. And for some reason, I was really drawn to the mini humbucker pickups. Just the smaller pickups.
Okay.
They just had a sound that I liked better. So I ended up picking that up.
Yeah.
And I've got all those flavors. I mean, standard, custom, deluxe, you know, junior, you know, 335. I have all the Gibson flavors.
Yeah. And
I try to keep a flavor around. I like a lot of the Mutt guitars from the 70s that I picked up. Like, for example, I've got like a Gibson S1. Mm-hmm. Which was a Mutt from the 70s.
Now, when you say for newbies like myself, define Mutt.
Okay, Mutt means something that didn't sell and was only made for a limited amount of time. Kind of an oddball.
Okay.
Gibson in the 70s, like between 76 and 80, they made these. They were trying to bite into Fender's market a little bit.
Ah, okay.
So what they did is, Fender is known for bolt-on necks, typically. Okay,
yeah.
It has
yes.
been through the years.
Gotcha.
And so Gibson basically took Les Paul-style bodies and flying V-necks, bolted them on, and then they put pickups. Like, the S1 has three single coils like a Stratocaster does.
Okay.
But the wiring's different. It sounds a little like a Strat, but it's different. It's a different animal.
Yeah.
But it's just really cool. And the Marauder was basically a Tele custom.
Okay.
Pickup configuration. Bill Lawrence designed the pickups.
Yeah.
And they have this funky sound to them, man. It's nothing like a Les Paul at all.
Yeah.
And when you can find these guitars that haven't been butchered with somebody sticking a full-size humbucker in them and stuff like that,
yeah,
they're pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I like oddball guitars like that. I have an Ovation Viper from the 70s.
Yeah.
It sounds like a cross between a Rick and a Gretsch. I mean, it's kind of weird.
Oh, wow.
And Glenn Campbell used to mess with them a little bit.
Okay.
He had like a Viper that was like a 12-string Viper. And once again, I think they were trying to get him in the hands of Telecaster players, and it never worked.
It just never took off. Okay, interesting.
It's a really well-made guitar. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's maple, heavy as heck.
Yeah.
24 frets.
Wow.
Yeah, which is just really crazy. But yeah, I like oddball guitars like that. You know,
that's cool.
Are fun. But I try and keep a little bit of all kinds of flavors around for tone. I don't get hung up on necks too much. As long as it's not like the hugest ball bat ever, you know. And even that, I'll play whatever's stuck in front of me.
Yeah.
And you play to the, in my case, I play to the guitar.
Okay.
If this guitar, if it's like a Fender where you got to fight it a little bit more, but it's got a nice twang and a spang to it, you play it harder, you know, and you dig in deeper.
Okay.
You know, it's, you know, Gibson's have a different feel. It's just that kind of thing. But overall, I love guitars. I love all kinds of them, you know.
Would you consider yourself a gearhead?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
I don't buy the latest boutique pedals out there all the time. I find something every now and then that I like.
Yeah.
And I'll buy it. But I got a gazillion pedals because I got a bunch of old ones that I've had since I was a kid.
Yeah. Now, do those pedals still work for you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
those,
I got
those
some
still...
old Electro-Harmonic
wow,
stuff.
Wow, okay.
A Flanders, junk like that, old Boss stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it works great. And I still have those things. But at the same time... you know, I do think, you know, with some of the boutique stuff, I think, you know, it's gotten quieter and better in some ways.
Yeah.
But sometimes the old stuff has the mojo.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree. What's your stage setup like?
All over the map.
Okay.
I have all kinds of different rigs that I use.
You're kind of in your own little sacred circle.
Fender, Vox, Marshall. Mm-hmm. Silvertone.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an old Seymour Duncan convertible amp that I was the original owner of, bought back in Columbus, Ohio in 1984. Still works. Just had a there's an amp guy here in town. His name's Drew Tooley.
Mm-hmm.
Lives in Murfreesboro, and he does amazing work on stuff.
Well, there you go. There's an endorsement.
Yeah.
If you're in Murfreesboro. Drew Tooley does.
You'll have to hunt him down or reach out to him. He does amazing work and.
Yeah.
And he works and designs amps. I think he's working in a partnership. I think it's called Creation Amps or something like that. And they're cool amps. I mean, it's just, you know, but he goes through a lot of my stuff and makes it work. And but yeah, I love Marshalls for Marshalls.
Yeah.
You know, I love a Fender Deluxe Reverb's my favorite Fender.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
That kind of thing. I have a Vox AC-15 hand wired that I use a bunch for, you know, Beatley type things.
Yeah.
Silvertone, you know, just all you, back in the day with Jennifer Knapp, you were talking about.
Yeah,
I played a Silvertone Twin 12.
Yeah,
on that gig, and it was just some pedals on the ground. It was a blast. So
she was truly. I know she's still working, but she truly was one of my favorites back.
Oh, absolutely,
absolutely great.
No question about it.
I mean, just a real. Kind of a fearless acoustic player and a great writer and the whole deal. She was the real deal.
Jen's
the real deal.
Absolutely all heart.
Yeah.
Just I love Jen. She's a great girl.
She's great. I actually did a mission trip with her back in 99. She's really cool. Like we were roommates on a missions trip in 1999 in the Dominican Republic. It was pretty crazy. but I digress. If you had one, and I can't wait to hear your answer on this, because I'm pretty sure you do have one guitar in your arsenal that could tell a story. Which one would it be, and what story would it tell?
Well, I'll say, my 78 Les Paul Deluxe.
Gotcha.
Tobacco Burst. It's just been with me for forever. I mean, I've used it on, you know, whether as a main guitar or a second guitar for practically every gig I've done. It's a boat anchor. The thing, you know, probably weighs 12, 13 pounds. It's a heavy one from that era.
Wow.
But it's comfortable. It's been with me, you know, touring in, you know, outside the country as well, which is insane. I should have never taken it with me, but unfortunately it survived without any damage. But
you're a brave boy.
Yeah,
you're a brave boy. Airborne's brutal.
it's just comfortable. Just played.
Yeah.
It, no matter what amp I plug it into, it always sounds great, and it's got that blend between enough power and enough low end to feel full, but it's got just a great top end that speaks.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Great mid-range to it. It's really cool. I love that guitar. It's so comfortable.
Yeah.
Just very, very comfortable.
Is that the guitar you use to write? Is that your writing?
You know what? I'll use anything.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll use anything. I just, I finished my first solo album just recently. Took me 10 years to do it.
Understood.
Because I work on everybody. Not
everybody
because
else,
it took that long to write.
Because you're working on everybody else's stuff. Trust me, I get it.
But like on that, I mean, yeah, that Les Paul's all over it.
Yeah.
With different amps and different pedal combinations and things of that nature.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So when you put the producer's hat on, and I know you do, you engineer, I know you got a lot of hats you wear. What do you look for when you hire a guitarist on a session?
Oh, gosh. Well, in my case, I inevitably end up playing guitar.
Oh, bless your heart.
Most of the stuff I play, because most of the time the artist wants it.
Yeah.
And now, if I'm working with a band, you know, for example, mainly just, you know, it's like anything else. You're looking for a performance. You want something to be in tune and in time.
Mm-hmm.
But you also want to have feel.
Yeah.
So when I first started working with Relient K, even though they were rudimentary players at the day, I did not immediately grab the guitar and start playing everything on the record.
Right.
Because I wanted it to have their imprint, you know, and their warts on
their
it.
Their sound,
and, know, and their kind of vibe to it and stuff. And inevitably through the years, they forced me to play more guitar on the record because they want a particular sound or like a... something that they hear and want to do, and it might be, you know, a little past their ability or something.
Yeah, understood.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, you just want to get something vibey and good down on...
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
On the computer.
Well, who's inspiring you now?
Man, who's inspiring me now?
Because you get... I mean, that's a... You've just alluded to the fact that you are in so many different scenarios musically... Yeah, and you have that, and it's hard to just get away to have that disconnect time. But when you have that disconnect time, who's really kind of refueling your tank?
Well, a couple things. Yeah. For me, I mean, Beatles always gets to me, okay? Because
because you can say the Beatles, but which phase of the Beatles?
In any all.
All, okay. You're a true believer.
Oh, top to bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a road trip, you know, if I'm looking for a quick pick-me-up, the early stuff's always great. Please Me is a great album.
Yeah.
You know, 14 songs, and most of them are two and a half minutes around there.
Yeah.
Just, they cut the album one day.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
Nobody cuts an album one day, a 14-song album. But it's joyful. I mean, the harmonies, everything are really joyful. If I'm on a road trip or something, a lot of times I'll listen to the White Album. You know, because it's long, it's moody, and, you know, it's got all the, you know, nice, you know, finger pick stuff, the first Travis picking kind of thing.
Yes.
But lately I've been listening to a lot of this band from the 70s called 10cc. That were out of England.
I'm not in love.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's...
I've been a fan for a while, but I always get back to it because they were four guys that had their own studio.
Yeah.
They had
real
their own
moody,
studio.
Atmospheric. Well, at least that single.
But they played all kinds of music. They all played different instruments. They all wrote together. They all sang. They all did their thing.
Gotcha.
And the Eric Stewart, the quote-unquote guitar player, was kind of the...
the quote-unquote guitar. Gotcha.
Well, yeah, he played more guitar than anything else.
Right, right.
But ironically, he wrote I'm Not in Love, and there's not really guitar on it.
It's mostly keys and vocals and effects.
Exactly.
And
But with him, you know, he engineered and worked on their records, and they're just really cool sounding records, and really clever.
Yeah.
They had an art school side to them, but they also had a pop sensibility.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. I actually, years ago, emailed Eric Stewart.
Really?
Just asking him some questions about, and I got direct email response back from him, and he was the most charming,
that's so
lovely
cool.
individual I've ever...
Makes it worth it. Yeah, that's very cool.
I asked him how he did the I'm Not in Love thing, how they got all that vocal thing happening, and this was before it ever came out on the internet.
Yeah.
And he actually wrote me back a full detailed email. That you could tell it was him because and I was blown away.
I would be too. That's pretty amazing.
But yeah, listening to some of their stuff's been inspirational lately.
There's a really great radio station that's popped up in the last like 5 or 6 years, probably more than that, but just 94.5 here in town, Hippie Radio.
Oh, okay, sure.
And I'm just, because I was one of those weird kids. I'm technically an 80s girl since I was born in 66. So, but I was always listening to those 70s bands. I was the one dissecting Queen harmonies and listening to stuff like that. So to hear you say 10cc, that reminds me of the 8.5 by 11 transistor radio that I had, and what little money I made from my paper route I used to buy either records or AA batteries so I could listen to my radio.
Yeah, there you go.
And that band sticks out very much in my mind. So Hippie Radio has just brought it all back for me because
they probably play.
They play a lot of stuff.
Obviously, I'm Not in Love was probably their biggest hit. But then they had The Things We Do for Love.
Which
was a great song. Their first single I remember was Wall Street Shuffle.
Oh my gosh,
back
I remember. Yeah. But yeah, the things we do for love, and that's been covered by
exactly.
And Amy Grant did a cover.
I think she did too. Yeah.
Did a nice little cover of that as well. Yeah. Well, that's really cool. It's cool to hear what musicians like to listen to.
I always seem to go back to older stuff. I hate to say that because I sound like. Yeah, exactly. I sound like the curmudgeonly old geezer, but
get off my lawn.
But just to be honest with you, I love the sound of the recording so much better back then. And it, I don't know it so much, you know, because it doesn't mean that it's better or worse then. But to my ears, it's more pleasant. Everything now is so loud and crushed and over the top and.
The word warm keeps coming back to my mind when I think of music from that era.
I'm a massive Dave Gilmour fan and Pink Floyd fan.
Yes.
And those albums had so much space to them.
Yes.
And there was, you know, even though they had a keyboard player that created a lot of the ethereal stuff, the guitar stuff had space too. And it was, and I miss that in modern music. There's too many tracks on pop music now, by and large. And once again, for my letdown taste, you know, for my recreational taste.
Right.
I mean, I can listen to something and go, oh, yeah, that's really cool. That's great, you know, and that sort of thing. But a lot of American pop music, let me specify that.
Yes.
A lot of American pop music for me is a little bit convoluted and the songwriting's too simplistic for the amount of tracks going on. It's almost like it's more about trying to keep your interest with the sounds versus actually having a quality song.
Yeah.
Just being honest, in my opinion.
Understood completely.
Whereas a lot of the stuff that comes over from England and things like that and across the pond, there's just some really interesting stuff out there, and they're not afraid to be daring.
Yeah.
Our country has long ceased being daring, you know, when it comes to pop music.
I've always had an affinity for British pop music, British soul music.
Sure.
More specifically, because they understood our history as Americans much and appreciated it much more than I believe many of our countrymen
do. Well, no question about it.
Yeah.
And you know, James Brown and all those artists traveled to England and played over there to packed houses.
Yeah.
Just absolutely, you know, a huge crowd.
And going back to the Beatles, wanting to hang out with the guys in the Funk Brothers in Motown, because they want to know how in the world, you know, Uriel Jones is you know, hitting the, you know, and, you know, what was his, it was Pistol, Pistol Allen. Just try, you know, it's like, it sounds like he hit it with a bloody tree. You know, it's like they're all, you know, fascinated
Peter. They covered all kinds of Motown and you know, they covered Sherelle stuff,
absolutely. And you got Peter Frampton saying how I mentioned this to another interview, but he said that he used to lean on his speaker to try to figure out how Robert White did those parts on all those Motown hits.
Yeah.
And to me, that just blows my mind and makes me just love music.
I got a great Peter Frampton story real quick.
Do tell.
Okay, this is kind of funny. And I will go on record as saying I've never met him, okay?
Yeah.
All right. I hear he's an absolutely wonderful individual.
He's a doll.
I've stood a foot away from him.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's part of the story. But my wife grew up absolutely idolizing Peter Frampton, of course, which a lot of girls of her age
absolutely
did, you know. Okay, well, that was one of the reasons, but I hated him when I was in junior high school. And because I was like, well, he's such a poser. I mean, look at the dude. Look at the guy, the way he looks. So I was already fairly accomplished on guitar by then. And so to me, I was kind of like, eh, he's got the talk box thing, you know. And it's, you know, he's got his little thing going on, this and that and the other. Okay, so years go by, and I don't think much about it, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm in Bash.
Yes.
Okay, and so I'm in my early 20s at this point. And we go home back to our families for Christmas every year. So I have a cousin of mine that lives outside of Columbus that has racks and racks of vinyl.
Yeah.
You know, crates full of vinyl. Yeah. And so every year I go there and, you know, check through his vinyl and just listen to stuff and see, you know, what he had. And he had all these Frampton albums and, like, even his solo, you know, like his studio albums, like Frampton's Campbell and, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and Some Things Happen, you know, all these records, you know. Yeah. And I'm like going, what? Dude's into Frampton? My cousin's into Frampton? And so
disappointed.
I was familiar with the live thing, so I stuck the live thing on the turntable, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I started listening. I'm going, gosh, who's the guitar player on this? It's lyrical as heck. You know, just, you know, I don't have a pick on me, so, you know, but it's just like, say,
Yeah.
You know, just, once again, I don't have a guitar pick on me, so I can't do the Frampton phrasing thing, but it's just amazing. And I'm like going, and I looked, and it was him. And
yeah.
I go, there's no way. There's no way that the blonde dude shaking his butt up there and all the chicks going crazy is this guitar player. And I got sucked into the great myth back when I was a kid. You know, I thought, and I was like, oh, geez.
Yeah.
So I, so long story short is we did some DC Talk was at some Nashville Awards thing years and years ago at TPAC.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there when he was living there during the time period. And so we're standing like right next to each other. And I wanted so bad just to say, man, I just love your guitar playing. I mean, you know.
You just,
And then, and like literally we're standing there and all of a sudden they introduced DC Talk. And because we played on the show.
Yeah.
So I had to jet and play. And I told my wife about it. She goes, you didn't say anything to him?
Like, you idiot!
That's it. So, but yeah, I mean, it's just...
That's funny.
Yeah, I would just you know...
Yeah, absolutely.
You can just great chord voicings and stuff.
Yeah,
I don't, I'm not a great finger picker. I'm a guitar pick guy more than anything else. And,
But you've got it. You've got
too funny.
So you were talking about you've got an album that you've been working on for the last 10 years. Instrumental, vocal. What's it? Tell us what it's about.
It's all over the map. It's a concept album.
Okay.
Because some of my favorite. I wanted to make something that I wanted to listen to on a road trip.
Yeah.
Okay. Even though I probably never will.
Yeah.
Because you don't listen to your own music. No. You know. So, but. You know, my favorite road trip albums, I think, like the Beatles' White Album, Who's Quadrophenia, you know, any of the Floyd stuff.
I have to stop you for just a moment, because there are some questions that are coming up in a bit. You've already given me answers to, like, a bunch. I've got, like, this game we're going to play in about 2 minutes.
Sure.
And you've already given me some of the answers, so it's going to just really be funny to hear you hear me ask the questions.
Oh, no problem.
But anyway, so so your album is
so
is concept.
I wanted to make something, I didn't want it necessarily to be pop music in that sense. I wanted to kind of have a thread to it. My dad passed away in 2005, and he lived a long, full life in his faith, which is great. His upbringing was hellacious. Mm-hmm. My grandfather, who I saw maybe 5 times in my entire life, was... a bastard. Okay, I'm sorry.
He was just a soulless, not good person. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, beating on my grandmother.
Yeah.
Drunk.
Yeah.
Beating on my dad. Cheating on my grandmother. Okay.
Just a horrific person.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
No, I get it.
It's a story. The whole album is called 1919. It was the year my dad was born.
Okay.
Okay. And it's basically the story of my grandparents getting married because they had to, which was an utterly radical concept in 1919 because they were pregnant with my dad, which I didn't find out till a couple years before he passed away.
Gotcha.
And just, it's all based around a conversation. I took a micro cassette to my dad's house a couple years before he passed away, stuck it on a table. And just like you're doing, I just asked him every question I could think.
Yeah.
Because he never talked about his upbringing.
Right.
Never. He served in World War II, never talked about that.
My grandfather was the same way.
Yeah. My mom had been sick for a lot of years. She died really young. My dad was a caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
But he never talked about the difficulties he went through.
Okay.
And so I basically, the album is a story kind of my dad's life. And it's a story of hope because at the end of it, all of his hope came from his faith in Christ.
Gotcha.
Okay. And so basically,
did he ever reconcile with his father?
You know what? He did in the sense that he definitely did not harbor anything against him, but he never really reestablished.
Gotcha.
I mean, I said I maybe saw my grandfather maybe five times in my life.
Right.
And part of that was my grandfather. That's just how he was. Mm-hmm. You know, it was difficult. But
that's interesting.
But it's kind of about my dad's faith journey ultimately. Mm-hmm. And it's, as I said, there's 19 cuts on it.
Okay.
I'm sure Linda, you know, it goes somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted to, you know, to do. I just didn't want to make a pot. It's, as a record producer, it's the worst thing I could have done.
Okay.
Because for a first album that you put out, you would never put out something like this.
Yeah.
You put out a nice pop album that everybody can wrap their hands or, you know, their ears around and you play it safe. I completely tossed all that to the wind.
And I admire that.
Made my version of Smiley Smile, Beach Boys, or something, anything, Todd Rundgren. I made my version of that.
Yeah.
I play most of the instruments on the record. Mm-hmm. Do most of, there's some guest vocalists mm-hmm. like Matisse from Lion K. And
yeah.
Some of the bands that I've worked with throughout the years, you know, some guest vocalists on it, stuff like that. But yeah, it's, as I said, it's... I still like it.
Yeah. When do we get to enjoy it?
I'm probably not going to release it until January because trying to release anything between now and Christmas
is just ridiculous. Yeah.
Is silly.
Yeah.
So it'll probably release first or second week of January.
Okay.
Right. But it's and I'm starting to learn how to play it. And I've got a couple buddies of mine that are when I do band aids will play with me as well because they're multi instrumentalists as well.
Right.
But there's just a million instruments on it. It's all over the map. You know.
Yeah,
it's kind of got that Americana thing, almost like Beach Boys, Smiley Smile. Would,
gotcha.
You know?
Yeah, I hear you. Well, that's exciting because, how can we access anything regarding you, like social media, website, all that stuff?
Yeah, exactly. I'm in the process of building these things up, of course, because when you're a musician, you don't deal with the administrative side of what you're doing.
Yeah. And you, exactly. Oh, I know.
But I mean, I can be accessed. I said I have Facebook or whatever, and I've got an artist page that's being put together, and I will do the dreaded website thing, which I will put content on because there's definitely all kinds of little video and
as my mom would say, he's on the Facebook, kids.
Yeah. and you can see me on the Google somewhere.
On the Googles and the internet.
Yeah, if you look at the Google. You will probably be getting somewhat of a media onslaught of it over the next few months as I lead up to it. So.
Well, I am excited about that, and I am really... This has been so great. It's been so seamless. It's like great story after great story. Even the gear questions have great stories attached to them. This has truly been one of my favorite interviews, and I really appreciate you coming out and spending time. Well, this is what I call the audio Rorschach test. There is no wrong answer.
Yes, sir.
We call it take your pick. It's either this or that.
Okay.
So we're going deep. All right. You ready?
I'll give it a shot.
All right. Here we go. Zeppelin or Skinner?
I'm probably more of a Zeppelin guy.
Okay.
I like Skinner.
Yeah.
Okay. I appreciate some of it.
Yeah.
But love Jimmy Page's, you know, phrasing on stuff. You know, it's just, and some of his alt tuning stuff. It's just really brilliant. Yeah. Skinner's just good rock and roll.
Good rock and roll. But I Ricky Medlock is, I could watch video after video. I could watch him live all day long. I'm a Skinner girl. I'm probably the only African American Skinner fan in the country. So I'm just putting that out there. Anyway, all right, strings, 10s or 11s?
I'm a 10s guy just because I like to do like the Lukather way over bending stuff. And for me, 11s are just a little, 11s at standard tuning for me are just a little, they're a little too much fight and they get a little dark for me on standard tuning.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm more of a 10 to 46 or 48 guys.
All right. Now I told you we're going deep. Peanut butter, smooth or chunky?
Probably more of a smooth guy.
Rocking. All right. Amps, Fenders or Marshalls?
Oh gosh, that's tough. Because
like 10 minutes ago, you just said you love one for some things and the other for other things.
Yeah, that's it. Like for me, if I'm, because man, both of them have their thing, man. It's like with Jay Sekulo band, my work with them, I use a Fender Deluxe, Blackface Deluxe, because it takes pedals so well, and you can just create every guitar you put in front of it. You get the voicing of the guitar so well.
Yeah.
But then again, if I'm playing rock and I've got a 50 watt, you know, 800 Marshall 800 that it's an amazing Marshall in the sense that most Marshalls you have to turn the bass all the way up and the treble and the presence practically off, and the top ends mess with the mid. This one, you can set all the controls straight to 12 o'clock, and it sounds perfect. Like, the EQ, like, literally works in it. Yeah. And it's got that thing, and man, you plug it.
But does it go to 11?
It's killer.
So it's so close. But which one? If one could go to 11, which one would you take to 11?
if I had to choose, I'd probably say Fender.
Okay.
If I had, but the Marshall is a super close second.
All right. Here's an easy one: coffee or tea?
I'm a tea drinker.
Okay. Yeah. Live or in studio?
I love playing live. Mm-hmm. I do. I mean, studio's fun. You create things and stuff. But ultimately, as a musician,
it's an interesting line. It's an interesting line.
For me, I love trying to create things live. Mm-hmm. I love the without a net thing live. In the studio, you can always go back and fix stuff. And for me, I love the thrill of trying to create something live. And not being so worried about me. You try not to make mistakes, but everybody makes mistakes. I mean, gosh, I've heard Phil Keaggy make mistakes, you know, no matter who it is, you know? but it's trying to create something on the fly that speaks to people.
Yeah.
I love that. And that's one of the things I love about blues and guys that like really dedicate themselves to the blues. Mm-hmm. Because to be a really good blues player is a challenge, man. To work over, you know, essentially three or four chords.
And to make it sing like... Yeah, to make it something that's
like
really
I looked at Gary Moore. Gary Moore is one of my favorite dudes, and a lot of people say, "Well, he's not a hardcore blues player." Okay, well, I'll give you that just because of the amount of gain. But dude's feel and was off the charts.
Yeah,
and I look at guys like that, and his live stuff is the same way. Mm-hmm. My hero on guitar is Jeff Beck.
Yeah,
and I've seen him a couple of times, and he still just blows me away.
Yeah.
With what he does. You know, with just a you know a Fender or a, you know a twang bar in his hands.
Yeah,
it still is just stunning. I mean, and for him that live thing, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes he's up, sometimes he's down.
But it's always.
But
captivating.
He's fearless.
It's always captivating.
And always. That's one thing I always you know I it's a good night for me when I try to be fearless. Mm-hmm. And what I'm doing, and the fearless doesn't mean braggadocious.
No, it means your soul is satisfied.
Just getting out of my head and mm-hmm. getting into my heart.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for me, I still think live. I think is my real passion.
Okay, well, with that said, toilet paper over or under?
Oh my gosh! Okay, that's funny. I'm probably an over guy, and I know when my wife's been around because she's under.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why would anybody roll toilet paper under? What's the logic? I don't understand.
It's a mystery. It's a mystery of life.
You have to work twice as hard to get it.
I know. You have to ask my husband. He's an under guy. But anyway, 4 a.m. Get up or go to bed.
For me, it would definitely more go to bed.
Okay. Yeah. This one's my favorite. Nile Rodgers or Curtis Mayfield?
Wow. Okay, that's tough too. I definitely am familiar with Curtis Mayfield mm-hmm. and what he brought. Oh, man, I like them both. Because Curtis could do that. I mean, Curtis didn't care if he was out of tune and just floppy and just, you know, vibey all day. I dig that. I liked a lot of Nile Rodgers' rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I said, the choppy stuff, you know, she got kind of slagged off as a disco band.
Yeah, but they were so much more.
They were way more
than
that.
They were so much more.
And I get that because so much of disco was lousy.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. There were so many lousy disco records out there.
Yeah.
You know?
Pandering. It was a decade of pandering.
But the stuff Nile Rodgers...
Yeah.
Did, you know, it was just great. It was brilliant.
To me, I feel like Mayfield laid the foundation and Rodgers kind of picked up and just brought it into the new millennium. So that one, either one of those will be...
You know, once again, no picks. So
he's one of those guys where it just makes you mad because he makes it look so easy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like if you watch Nile Rodgers play, it's like, oh, I can do that. No, you can't. Yeah. But you feel like you can because he makes it look so easy. It's like when Chaka Khan sings, she hits high note. I'm like, oh, I can sing that. No, I can't.
Yeah.
No, I can't. But she makes it look easy.
It always bummed me out too with Nile Rodgers in the sense that when I found out later that he wasn't even going through an amp. He was going straight into a Neve channel on a console for his guitar sound. It was direct.
Wow.
With a Strat.
That's cool.
Probably was, you know, probably had some kind of compressor, obviously, and a bunch of EQ on it. But that was his whole thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got a couple more for you.
Sure.
Batman or Superman?
Oh, I'm definitely a Batman guy.
All right. Yeah. And lastly, road trip song. Graceland by Paul Simon or Ramblin' Man by the Allman Brothers?
Probably more Ramblin' Man.
Mm-hmm. That is a great road trip. Yeah. Although I do love Paul Simon, but Allman Brothers, that's good driving music.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate Paul Simon, especially as a lyricist.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, brilliant, brilliant songwriter and stuff like that. I love the jam bandy factor of Allman stuff. I can listen to noodling like that, especially when it's so heartfelt. And those tones, I love the tones from that era, you know, just kind of that cleany, sustainy thing that they had. Go on with the guitar harmonies and stuff.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Which is really cool, so.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Townsend, our guest for today. This has been fun. And, you know, I'll tell you, the main thing I really appreciate about this is the fact that we've come up with a new phrase, a noodle nerd.
Yeah.
Out of this interview has been born a phrase. I'm going to start asking my interviewees, are you a noodle nerd?
And I was gonna say, and that's not a negative term.
It's not. It's very much a positive term.
There can be negative noodle nerds, and there can also be positive noodle nerds. You know,
the negative noodle nerds are when you're trying to figure out, when you're in a sound check and you're trying to get something worked out, and dude's over here, noodle nerd over here. Yeah, but otherwise, yes, it's a pretty positive thing. But thank you so much for being a part of our show.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Marcia, and thank you, NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
Dedicated to bringing you inspiration, education, and behind-the-scenes stories from prominent guitarists and others influential in the music profession. To hear more, subscribe to the Nashville Guitar Store podcast in iTunes. Go to NashvilleGuitarStore.com or find us on Facebook and Instagram.